Hello, everyone. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Mo.
And this is Team Get Over It.
We're an all-female team participating in the greatest motoring adventure on the planet, the Mongo Rally.
We'll be driving 10,000 miles across mountains, deserts, and unknown terrain.
And along the way, we hope to spread our feminist and environmental ideals.
Join us here as we share our stories, thoughts, and interviews as we get ready for the Mongo Rally 2023.
Third time's the charm, I hope. Good day.
Welcome.
Caitlin, you doing okay there, buddy?
Not at all. I feel like hot garbage. So everyone, please excuse my lack of voice this month. The show must go on, as they say.
Well, we'll keep trucking, so I hope you feel better as we go along. On that note, what are we going to be talking about today?
Well, okay, so it's been a while since we did an environmental-themed episode, so today we're going to talk about carbon offsets.
Ooh, sounds like fun.
Yes, actually, to be honest, like this episode was kind of inspired by one of the recent John Oliver episodes who also talked about carbon offsets. I'm going to talk about some different stuff than he did, and I'm going to go into the history, I guess, of environmental stuff in America, environmental consciousness in America. And I'm also going to give some different examples of carbon offsets that are totally bogus. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story. So
okay.
Yeah, let's jump
well,
into
I'm
it.
I'm excited to hear it. So
it took me a while, and there's a lot of if you visit the blog post after listening to this podcast episode and scroll down to the sources, I used a lot of sources on this one. There's a lot of information out there about carbon offsets. It's very interesting. So anyway, let's get to it. So nowadays, people are more aware of the impact they have on the environment, and many are trying to change their lifestyles to become more eco-minded. Of course, there are many comforts and conveniences in our modern lives that we are loath to give up, including eating out, driving, and traveling abroad. So what can you do? Some companies have started offering something very specific and appealing to their environmentally conscious customers to assuage their guilt and ensure their continued patronage. That is, of course, a carbon offset. So people can pay a small fee, which then supposedly is spent in support of environmentally friendly projects like forest conservation, green energy research, etc. The idea is that you can cancel out your carbon footprint with a small sum.
Right, like you buy 100 plastic bottles and $3 gets donated to plant a tree somewhere in Canada.
Yeah, exactly. That's what basically happens. So it sounds great, doesn't it? Now we can enjoy nature damaging activities while remaining unsullied, right?
Well,
yeah, well, not exactly. Yeah, just like with everything else, we cannot 100% trust anything large corporations in a capitalist world say. After all, their number one concern has been and always will be making a profit at the expense of pretty much everything else. That doesn't mean that some companies don't genuinely care for the environment and some do make an actual difference, but you should approach these carbon offsets with many grains of salt. Remember, if something sounds too good to be true, it often is.
Yep.
Yeah, as we all know. So you may be surprised to learn that the U.S. government has been keen on curbing air pollution since at least the 1940s.
Yeah, did not know that.
Yeah, it's
considering all the hairspray that they used in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, like the DDT stuff and yeah, like lots of problems. So it all actually started with the 1948 Donora smog fiasco, where for 3 days a mixture of hydrogen fluoride and sulfur dioxide were thrown into the air by the nearby American Steel and Wire plant owned by U.S. Steel's Donora Zinc Works.
Yikes.
Smog was a common occurrence in the small Pennsylvania town, but during these days, the weather was against them, and the smog accumulated and hung in the air to the point that 14,000 people became ill, and at least 50 people died as a result of the pollution.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was like if you Google it and you look at the photos, they are disturbing.
I imagine it's like just clouds that are like touching the ground that people are walking through. It's like fog almost.
Yeah, that's
My
exactly what it looks
imagination
like.
is just like, it looks like fog.
Yeah, and there's no people on the street, and like there's a couple of like a couple of women walking around, and they've got masks on because like of course you have to cover your face. Just it's a kind of a nightmare scape. Horrible.
Post-apocalyptic nightmare. Boom.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. So the town got a bad reputation for being dangerously unhealthy to live in, and property values dropped significantly. As a result, the US government started looking into policies they could enact to help reduce the risk of similar tragedies occurring in the future. But again, like it's a lot of like money motivated.
Right. They want to
Yeah.
prevent the tragedy so that they can continue to make money. So what can they do to fix it enough?
Yeah. To like, keep the town like profitable and keep people interested in like going there,
Right.
and yeah. No, it's quite interesting. Anyways, that was 1948. In 1955, the Air Pollution Control Act was enacted, which provided funding for the U.S. Public Health Service for training and research, but it did not directly control polluters and pollutants as of yet. The program was extended multiple times over the years while the government considered how far they could push anti-pollution policies. Finally, in 1963, the Clean Air Act was launched. The act encouraged all levels of government to create and manage their own pollution standards and provided $95 million over 3 years in funding to do so. There have been
Love that.
countless additions and amendments to the Clean Air Act over the years, including ones to reduce the frequency of acid rains. Remember acid rain?
Yep, I do remember acid rain being a thing, especially in like towns that had coal mining.
Yeah. I remember there being like so many commercials and stuff on TV about acid rain. And like I remember, because like those some government buildings have copper roofs, and then it turns green. And I remember people being like, "That's because of acid rain." Yeah,
I don't think that's the reason, but okay, sure. I'll go with
it's
it.
just like it's just oxidization, but like or
Yeah.
oxidation, whatever. But yeah,
I remember hearing about acid rain, but I was in Alaska at the time,
okay.
and we didn't really have to worry about it because we weren't down near like coal mines or things like that.
Oh, so interesting. Yeah, I just I remember like actually being fearful of that, but then like suddenly nobody gave a shit about acid rain anymore.
Right. I wonder
Yeah,
why.
I don't know. Anyway, so the acid rain, regulating car, boat, and airplane emissions, and even ozone layer protection. So yeah, of course. So by the late 80s, Americans were already used to hearing about air pollution, and in 1989, Applied Energy Services unveiled their new coal-fired power plant in Connecticut. Now we're getting into
Oh
the
boy.
coal. So, to mitigate some of the damage their new plant would undoubtedly cause, and to placate those who would sound the environmental alarm, they decided to offset some of the anticipated emissions by financing an agroforest in Guatemala. This is considered to be the first carbon offset project ever.
So we're gonna offset our destroying the land in our country by growing trees in another country.
Yes.
Okay.
That's how they work. That's how offsets work.
No, I get it. I'm just sitting here going, why couldn't you just do it in like the town over or three towns over or something else, like something nearby?
I mean, great
Anyways.
question.
Bye.
Fabulous question. Anyway,
No
so
answers.
no answers. Yeah. Well, I mean, I have answers. There's reasons why people do it like so far away. Like they do it in very remote areas, so people can't check it.
Yeah, that makes
Basically,
sense.
it's like, oh no, there's definitely a forest there. You can believe us. Just take our word for it. Like, for real. So anyway, it was estimated that the coal plant would produce 14.1 million metric tons of carbon over its 40-year lifespan, and that the forest the company had invested in would sink about 15.5 to 16.3 million metric tons of carbon. So the idea is globally, overall, right? More carbon would get absorbed by the forest than the coal mine would produce over 40 years.
Right.
This is the idea. So it seemed like a pretty good deal. On top of that, the area where the forests are extremely poor, and the project also provided forestry education and training to people from local communities. So it's creating jobs. It's supposed to be like, you know, helping people get food and like, you know, livelihoods and et cetera, et cetera. So it's supposed to be like both environmentally impactful and then also like supporting people. So like having a social impact as well. However, an external evaluation was conducted in 1999, so 10 years later, and found that the project had actually only offset about 270,000 tons of carbon. So only about 1.8% of their initial goal.
Right.
In 1996, so at the midpoint, kind of, the World Resources Institute estimated that the amount of carbon sequestered in the first 5 years was around 11.5 million tons.
Hmm.
Right. So like we have this like huge disparity in the numbers.
Right. There's a
It's kind of interesting. So how did that happen? So internal emails at the time reveal that the actual amount was unknown, citing missing data and inaccurate models. In the end, the project was a colossal failure due to lack of personnel, data collection, and notably the reduction of the project area from 280,000 hectares to 121,000 hectares. Over the course of the first leg of the program. Yeah, it's
so. Okay. So they started off with like this large plot of land and then they continue to reduce it and then they lost a lot of data so they can't prove anything. That's what you want to hear.
Yeah. So, of course, since this was the first time such a project had been undertaken, there would be some inevitable like teething problems. Surely. We learn from our mistakes and there must be better regulations now, right?
I doubt it, but you would hope.
You'd hope so. It's very amazing. So, all right, now we're getting closer to the current day. The Kyoto Protocol, remember Kyoto? The Kyoto Protocol was signed by 192 countries in 1997. Developed nations were obliged to limit and reduce their greenhouse gas emissions, of course. So one way for countries to meet their targets and not be penalized was for them to offset what they produced by investing in green spaces and infrastructure elsewhere. In that same year, the Oregon legislature passed a bill requiring new power plants to limit their net carbon output to 17% below the most efficient combustion turbine plants located within the country. To this end, PacifiCorp Power Marketing, who is building a 500-megawatt power station, proposed a $4.3 million carbon offset plan, which included a $3.1 million to fund offsite projects. One of their projects was to fund the installation of solar panels to 182,000 homes in India and Sri Lanka.
Okay.
I know. It's like, again, like this is like very remote, so nobody can check it. The logic here is that in rural areas, people use kerosene lamps, which is carbon heavy. Replace that with solar power and voila, carbon offset. They want to put panels, solar panels on 182,000 homes. In the end, only 32 solar panel systems were installed and the project was canceled in 2001.
Yep, got surprised because Sri Lanka and I'm sure the parts of India they were planning on going to are very remote and very rural, and the houses are not necessarily the most stable.
Well,
based on pictures that I've seen of like rural villages in the area, they're very traditional.
Yeah, no, you're right. So like it's these very traditional houses. And then so listen, so the failure of this project was largely due to two strict eligibility criteria, and the solar panels weren't free. Yeah, those who received solar panels had to pay back the installation costs over 5 years. So it might have worked out to be a good deal for them. Like if you think about like how much they're saving. Right, in like kerosene, maybe, like I don't know. But the prospect, I guess, of having to pay back a loan probably drove a lot of the people away. Like you were saying, you're totally right. So this is like rural areas, it's poor areas. And then like if you walk up to them and it's like, hey, do you want this solar panel that you've never seen before and you have to pay for it, by the way? Like, of course, people are going to say no.
Right. You would be better off just offering it to them for free and installing like a system that would – provide power to the whole village, not just a specific home.
Exactly. But that's not what they were doing. And it was like, as far as like the eligibility criteria was, like it was only certain people could get it, not everybody. And like, instead of installing them in like buildings and stuff that like helped the entire communities, like schools mm-hmm. and stuff, they like, they wouldn't install them there for some reason. They would only do like private homes.
Yeah, they wouldn't install it in a school or any other public building, because then it's public property, not personal property.
Mm.
And they can't make as much money.
I don't know. I guess. Like, it's very strange. Yeah, it's very strange.
It's weird. It's weird. I don't understand why they would do it that way, but
a lot of these projects are severely lacking research beforehand. Like, somebody, like an anthropologist or sociologist or someone, should have gone into the community ahead of them and, like, done mm-hmm. some research about, like, where these kinds of things would actually benefit people the most, and like where people would accept them the most.
Right. Who's going to be the most accepting community of this weird new technology that they've never heard of.
Yeah. It's really interesting. And then plus, like, in India in particular, I didn't include it in the blog post, but I did read about it. But they were using energy access, like electricity access, as a kind of political tool. So, So like the political leaders in the area probably didn't want this outside company coming in and installing solar panels either, mm-hmm. because like that's their main campaign. It's their main campaign point. It's just like, if you vote for me, I'll get energy. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
and then a company comes in and says, hey, I got this energy for you.
And it's like, dang it, he's frickly. Yeah. So like there was a lot of like resistance and stuff, even political. It's just like, and nobody checked anything first. And that's the problem.
Oh my God. Research, people. Research before you do.
Yeah. So like, so the Pacific Core is in the United States being like, oh, look at us, we have all these offsets, and they actually have nothing.
Yeah.
So, and you know, common story. In the end, yeah, practically no carbon offset occurred from this particular scheme. So the previous two cases that I mentioned are prime examples of how something that looks good on paper can fail due to poor planning, research, and execution. It reminds me a lot of Tom's. Do you remember Tom's?
The shoe company?
Yeah, exactly. The shoe company. So Everybody, like, they were hugely popular. Everyone wanted to buy their shoes because they thought they were really helping poor kids in other continents, like other countries.
Right. You buy a pair of shoes, they donate a pair of shoes.
Right. And the kids appreciated the shoes, I'm sure, but they didn't really make much of an impact on their lives. Like, I remember, I'm pretty sure, watching something, and it was somebody in Africa, I believe. And then somebody was like, so how do you feel about your shoes? And he's like, well, I guess the shoes are pretty cool, but like, what I actually need is clean water.
Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of like this. It's like, oh, I guess it's pretty cool having solar panels, but it's not really what I need right now. So like,
Right. The basic needs of most people are food, water, shelter, heat.
Yeah.
And then if those are met, then they can want and or need other additional things. But those are the basics they have to cover first.
Yeah. But at the time, anyway, Tom's, the reason why Tom's was so popular was because it made people feel good to buy them. Mm-hmm. And that's the essence of carbon offsets. People feel good when they buy from companies that claim to be carbon neutral. And people feel good when they spend a couple of bucks to offset their own carbon footprint. The reality is many of these projects are lies. So let's look at some more kind of more modern examples. So this one, the entirety of Australia is lying.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And Australia, despite having like pretty low population, they do produce a lot of emissions because they have like coal. They're pretty coal dependent.
Mm-hmm.
So earlier this year, Professor Andre McIntosh, an environmental law and policy expert from the Australian National University, blew the whistle on the government scheme to buy carbon credits to reduce the country's emissions to hit their targets. He stated that the $4.5 billion direct action emissions reduction fund from the government was severely lacking in credibility. Allegedly, projects for regrowing forests are particularly flawed. He and his colleagues reviewed 119 reforestation projects worth 17.5 carbon credits, with one credit equal to one ton of carbon absorbed. Most of the areas surveyed had not increased in size since the beginning of the project. So they're supposed to be like planting trees and making forests bigger, but it's not happening.
Right.
And 59 of the forests had actually reduced in size.
Oh no.
Yeah. So like, obviously their math is going to be off. Like they're making these projections. Like it's kind of similar to like what happened in Guatemala. Like they're making projections based on like certain amount
things
of
that
growth.
Don't exist.
Yeah. It just doesn't exist. Yeah. Their numbers are totally wrong. The team also found issues with landfill projects that were supposed to capture methane. They discovered that 2/3 of the claimed reduction in emissions would have happened anyway and were not like additional cuts as required by policy to receive the carbon credits. So a lot of these things too, like for offsetting, it has to be more than what nature is already doing. Like it has to be like extra effort. But in this case, they're saying that like they're again projecting. They're like, oh yeah, like this is more, but it's actually not. It's kind of normal, so it's not really offsetting,
right?
Or not as much as they said. So, and that's the government of Australia, the whole government of Australia. Amazing. And I found this. Okay, so I found this man, and I really want to like read a book about him because he sounds like an absolutely crazy person. But there's this man named Russ George. So this happened like a little while ago, but like in a bid to get rich quick, George saw the profit in carbon offsets and in 2007 set sail on his boat called Planktos to the Galapagos Islands. His goal? To spread iron dust over 2.4 million acres of ocean in hopes of creating an enormous algae bloom.
Why?
Right. So and like, I don't know if you know anything about algae blooms, but they do occur naturally sometimes. But they're not really a good thing because they kind of like suck all the oxygen out of the water and like fish die and shit. Like they're not good.
That's why I made the face. I was like, why?
Why? Yeah.
Why are you killing all the fish?
Yeah. So the bloom, this is the reasoning. The bloom would act as a carbon sink and George would sell the offsets for $5 a ton. According to the Parametric Press, 1 acre of algae can remove up to 2.7 tons of carbon per day.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, so like depending how big the bloom is, so like 1 acre of algae can remove 2.7 tons of carbon from the atmosphere per day.
Okay.
It's pretty good. Like as a carbon sink, it's great. But like, you know, then you're killing all the fish. So it's like, so I get what he's doing. So, I mean, I ain't going to do that math, but that spells a lot of money for George because he's talking about like he wants to make 2.4 million acres of algae.
Right. And then sell it.
And sell it for like, you know, $5 a ton of anyway. Yeah, exactly. So he's going to make a lot of money. Millions. So. Thankfully, there was a public outcry, and Sea Shepherd. I've done a little bit of research about Sea Shepherd before, but Sea Shepherd.
Oh, that's one of the environmental like pirate groups that goes out and, like disrupts fishing and things like that. Okay, okay.
Yeah, so Sea Shepherd got involved. They threatened to ram the planktos that were going to like sink the boat. Yeah. So anyway, George gave up.
They've been violent. Well, I don't necessarily support their methods, their reasoning. I do support like the protecting the environment and all that I support, but I don't necessarily support the violent means that they use.
Hey, listen, they get results.
That's very true.
So George gave up, but not too long after hatched a new plan of planting trees in Hungary and selling that. So he presented certificates for the offsets and his like, you know, Hungarian forests to the Vatican on July 5th, 2007, the photos of which went viral on the internet. So there's like, I have like a picture of Russ George giving a certificate to Cardinal Paul Poupard, and it's all very fancy and everyone looks all very happy and stuff. It's very official. But George's company, also called Plankto, suddenly closed in December without ever planting a single tree. So he sold all these carbon offsets to people, and then he never just the forest does not exist.
Right.
So a lot of parties were affected by this: the Vatican, the country of Hungary, the village of I'm gonna butcher this, Tizaskeski.
Wow. Anyway,
yeah, and all of the people who were swindled out of their money by George. So yeah, a lot of problems with that. But he's like, and then later he kind of like made a new company, and people tried to like contact him. It's like, hey bro, like did you what happened? Because he never reported any of the income that he earned either, so like nobody knows how much money he actually made from that. Yeah, and then he made a new company, and people were like, yo, like what happened to the forest in Hungary? And he's like, oh, I'm not affiliated with that debunked company anymore, so I have no idea. He just like pretends not to know anything about it.
Oh my god. Oh my god. He sounds like a very interesting character. He sounds like if Tiger King was into environmentalism.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god.
It's pretty wild. But I mean, and his motivation is like just making money, right? That's all he wants to do is make money. And he did make money.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if he's just one person, I'm sure there's like tons of Russ
people
Georges
like
out
that,
there.
Yeah.
So you have to be really careful. And airlines, obviously airplanes are huge emissions producers. So the Guardian and Unearthed, which is the investigative arm of Greenpeace, investigated 10 forest projects that provide carbon offsets to 6 major airlines, including British Airways and EasyJet. They found that there were inconsistencies in the methods and tools used to measure how much of the regions would become deforested in the future. So, I mean, we've already seen examples of like them not properly measuring those forested areas, right? So like the numbers are just off again. Most of the projects use different algorithms to predict what would happen to the forests in the futures. And it seemed like the data was skewed in the project manager's favor on more than one occasion by predicting that the forest would be completely wiped out in the near future without their intervention, which seems fishy, obviously. Like it doesn't make any sense. So one project predicted that the deforestation would be triple the rate it was in its historically worst year. So instead of like basing their projections on actual data, they were just like, make it worse.
Right.
Yeah, which works in their favor because like it's like they creates more carbon credits.
If it sounds worse and we're helping, then better for us.
Exactly. And then another project, which was located in a national park and had not experienced any reduction in decades, was forecasted to experience huge deforestation without outside intervention.
Huh. Really?
Yeah. Bro, I don't think so.
I don't think so, bro. Unless somebody's going in there and be like, yeah, you can log there. That's fine.
In a national park? Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Oh, man. Obviously, these projects and their bogus models are producing the carbon credits are not producing the carbon credits they are claiming to, which means the offsets are, in the best cases, less than anticipated, and the worst cases, totally useless.
Right.
The CEO of Etihad Airways in 2021 said, I think offsetting is cheating. It's a short-term stopgap if you haven't got a more sustainable alternative, but it's cheating.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're actually trying to be more environmentally friendly, like this is not the way to do it.
Right.
So the question is, why do companies and countries do this? Well, there are many factors contributing to these scams. In some cases, it might really be like a lack of management, training, and research. We might simply lack the proper knowledge at this point to accurately measure and predict carbon absorption with accuracy. But honestly, the real problem is what it always is, money.
Right.
Like the value of the global carbon market surged to $851 billion US.
Mm-hmm.
Last year. So, and everybody wants a piece of that pie. Like there's so many Russ Georges out there who just want to make a buck. And not only that, but those who are on the other end of the carbon market, and I mean buyers, so people who are buying carbon credits, might also find it cheaper to buy credits than to pay fines for going over their emissions limits.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's like a self-preservation thing, I guess, or it's like, anyway, it's a way for companies like private companies and governments and blah, blah, blah to like keep their money, I guess. That's wild. But anyway, being a green company is also an excellent marketing tool for private companies who want to capture eco-conscious consumers. Mm-hmm. You may feel like the victim right now, but the one who really pays is the environment. So instead of investing in actual sustainable and green technology, companies and countries spend money on carbon offsets, which, as we know, probably aren't doing much good. So is the environment actually benefiting? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Like it's suffering because of anyway, what we're doing.
Why do you think there are so many fires in California?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, California, like Canada's on fire too. Like all the fires in
Washington's
France.
Washington's on fire. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. The world's on fire.
Literally. Yeah. And like, you know, more severe weather stuff. It's like, you know, despite decades, like we've been trying to limit our emissions for decades and decades, and it doesn't really seem to be helping.
Well, and based on what you've relayed so far about the carbon sinking or the it doesn't seem like it's actually doing anything, because they're not actively trying to actually do what they say they're trying to do. They're just looking to cover their butts and make it seem like they're doing something good, even though they're not.
Exactly. So there's somebody else, so a couple quotes anyway. Offsets in sustainable aviation fuels, or SAFs, take away from progress towards truly transformational technology like hydrogen or electric powered planes that will directly lower carbon emissions, says Jose Faradi, CEO of Wizz Air. So, I mean, he's totally right. Like, people are, instead of actually investing in really actual helpful technology that will reduce emissions, they're just like, oh, I'm just going to buy some carbon offsets that are totally bogus and just keep doing what I've always been doing. So it's like these offsets are getting in the way of progress, basically.
Right.
Yeah. And carbon offsetting is truly a scammer's dream scheme, says Chris Greenberg from Greenpeace. He continues, it's a bookkeeping trick intended to obscure climate-wrecking emissions. It's tree planting window dressing aimed at distracting from ecosystem destruction. It's the next big thing in greenwashing, and we must not be fooled. Mm-hmm. Yeah, greenwashing being, I guess, like when companies like pretend that they're green, but they're not.
But they're not, yeah.
Yeah.
Like how Starbucks back in like the early 2010s was like, oh, we're going to go green and, you know, no more straws.
Yeah.
And it's only recently that they've actually followed through with that. And you're starting to see lids that are have like the sippy lip instead of like a straw. And if they do straws, it's the paper straws, which are compostable.
But you know,
some of them actually aren't, because they're lined with wax.
Right. Yeah. And like there's a lot of stuff that's like that. And it's And it's like, oh, you can recycle this. It's paper. But like it's not actually recyclable, because like you said, it's combined with like other plastics and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I saw the most amazing thing the other day. And I think it's like a perfect metaphor for this kind of stuff. But I was into, because like in Korea, a lot of fast food places, like if you're dining in, they won't give you a paper cup anymore.
Yeah, they give you like an actual cup, like a real.
Yeah. Which they have to wash, which like is using water, which is like, again, it might not be actually beneficial to the environment, but anyway. And then I went to McDonald's and I got a flurry, or whatever they call blizzards.
Yeah.
Wait, what are they called? No, flurries, McFlurry. I don't know.
McFlurries, yeah.
I'm getting my fast food places mixed up. But yeah, so, and you know how they take the plastic spoon and they have that spinny machine to like spin the ice cream around, and they have to put the spoon on the machine and the spoon actually spins the thing, and then they give you the spoon so you can eat with it.
Yeah.
Because they have to use the plastic spoon with that machine. So they made my flurry with the plastic spoon, but because I was dining in and not eating to go, they couldn't give me the plastic spoon, I guess. So they threw out the plastic spoon and gave me a metal one.
That's so silly.
I know.
That's so silly. If they were going to get, oh my God, they should have just given me the plastic spoon.
Just give me the plastic spoon.
Like, who gives a shit? Like, I know I'm dining in, but like, just give me the plastic spoon.
Oh, and like, oh, and that's God. What, like, that's greenwashing. And it's like, oh God. And it, like, I just, I was so shocked. I was like, what the heck was that? Crazy stuff. I don't know. So sometimes friends, like, you got to pay attention to that kind of stuff. Like, it's, yeah, it's not as environmentally friendly as you think it is. So anyway, the result is that there's no significant reduction in global emissions despite over two decades of protocols, accords, and calls to action. And I know, the world population has also increased, you know, humans, mm-hmm. we also make carbon. But like, based on my reading, I think these carbon offset scams play a big role. Activists and whistleblowers have caught on to the deceptions, but it seems like the world leaders are a little slow to the punch. Carbon offsets were a major talking point during the COP26 conference last year. And speakers touting them, luckily anyway, were challenged by Greta Thunberg and Jennifer Morgan. We too need to open our eyes and step up to companies and governments and push for real action, not just these like carbon offset band-aids.
Right. Gotta love Greta. She's just like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do and I'm going to say what I'm going to say. And you guys are either going to listen or you're not.
Yeah, she's incredible.
But I'm going to fucking say what I'm going to say. And I will be heard.
And she's right. Like, yeah. She's not wrong.
No.
So, yeah. And like, so I actually like checked one of my students. She did, model UN stuff. And like the question was like, is it a good idea to, for like right now? Cause like we're in a recession, like we're coming out of COVID. And the question for their UN topic, I guess, was, is it a good idea for nations to push their green agendas, I guess, like right now, like in this time of instability, blah, blah, blah. But like, and the argument is like, if you go green, then it's going to create jobs and et cetera. But I was looking at a lot of graphs and it seems like a lot of countries are reporting a reduction in emissions, but like a lot of developed countries anyway are reporting that. But when I checked the actual like total greenhouse gas emissions worldwide, it's actually like increasing. It hasn't reduced at all. And I'm just like, wait a minute. And I get like, you know, developing countries obviously are creating, but like the biggest polluters are what, China, America, Australia, Canada. And it's like, but they're all reporting. Yeah, Russia's pretty bad. They're all reporting reductions, but it's actually not reducing. So,
right.
And like, I think it has maybe something to do with these like carbon offsets. And it just makes me annoyed. It makes me mad.
I mean, I don't understand. I get that they're trying to make more money. Get it. Mm-hmm. But I don't understand why they feel the need to lie and constantly try and like fool everyone. Like, why? It's like dealing with a little kid. They're like, I'm going to fool you. And if you don't like get in their face and be like, look, I know what you did. You're not going to fool me. Knock it off. I'm not going to tell you again. They're just going to continue to do it and think that they can get away with it. And it's super obnoxious. Like, why are these big corporations acting like 3-year-olds?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
To make money.
Ugh. That's the reason. Yeah. But I mean, at the expense of literally everything.
Yes. Right.
It's bad.
Oh, you're going to make money, but the world's going to die anyway. So what's the point?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I mean, so they'll live large for the couple good years that we have left. And then.
Ugh. I was going to say, it's not like they can take their billions and trillions of dollars with them to the grave.
Well, I guess they'll spend as much as they can while they can. So anyway, so that's my presentation about carbon offsets.
Well, it was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry about my voice, but
no, it was great. Like I honestly didn't know what carbon offsets was. Like I had an idea about what it might be, but it wasn't 100% until he started explaining it to me. And I was like, yeah, nope, that sounds about right. Okay.
Yeah, I learned a lot. And then, you know, for our listeners and for you too, I really do recommend watching that John Oliver episode because he talks about other carbon offset scams.
Right.
So it kind of gives more examples, and he's a phenomenal researcher and presenter. So like he presents the information in a really interesting way, but it's just like after doing my own research and after watching like, you know, his video and stuff, I just really don't have any faith in carbon offsets at all.
Right. Like, why don't we actually invest in technology that'll actually make a difference?
Yeah. And I've heard, I have heard that there is a lot of research going into like hydrogen. Like they're trying to make like hydrogen powered boats, and they're trying to do like hydrogen powered like energy stations, and which is clean. It's clean burning.
Yeah.
It is a little volatile, like it can explode, but
Yep.
But
if you can figure out how to do it safely.
Yeah. Then hopefully we'll get there.
Sooner than later. But yeah, I agree. And Tesla has been pushing their electric car, and the electric car idea has become more popular nowadays. However, the production of said electric cars isn't any better than the production of a gas or diesel car.
Yeah. So. But I've seen a lot of in Korea, electric cars are really popular, actually. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of like Hyundai is making electric cars now. And then like I see a lot of those on the road, and I see a lot of Teslas. Mm-hmm. And even buses, there's a lot of city buses now. They're 100% electric. But yeah, you're right. Like
it's not like they're repurposing old cars and putting in an electric engine and like taking out all the pieces that were needed for the gas vehicle and like replacing them with it, what they need for the electric. No, they're making brand new vehicles rather than repurposing what's already exists. So
yeah. But I wonder if they're using like recycled material. I don't know. Hey, who knows? But like
metal should be infinitely recyclable as long as you can heat it up hot enough.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Well, most of it. Glass. I know. Yeah. Like aluminum. Yeah. Aluminum is. I don't know about the other kind of metals though. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But a lot of cars nowadays are made out of plastic.
Yeah. No, I know. To make them lighter.
Yeah, it's a big problem also. Like lighter and then rust resistant, I guess. But like
Everything's got its pros and its cons, and it's all a matter of what we as a society view as a positive, as enough of a positive to outweigh the con.
Yeah.
But us as the consumer aren't always aware of what the pros and the cons are, other than this is the pro and all we ever hear is that.
So. Yeah. I mean like the big takeaway is like just, I don't know, don't believe everything at face value, question everything, do your research.
Well, I mean, if you honestly want to make a difference in your community and your country and make a positive impact on the environment, you know, do your own research. Don't just believe what everybody's telling you.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think that's all we have time for today. If you like today's episodes, please like, comment, subscribe, and share on whatever platform you're listening to this on. It really helps us out.
And consider becoming a patron on Patreon. Patrons get access to exclusive content, AMAs, and more. All proceeds will be donated to the Center for Reproductive Rights and Cool Earth. All links in the description.
Also, check out our website and social media pages for updates and blog posts, and links are in the description.
Thanks again, guys, and see you next month. Hopefully, by then, my voice will be back.
We can only hope. Fingers crossed, Caitlin.
Fingers crossed.
All right, bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
That's it for today, folks.
Thanks so much for tuning in.
And as always, please support this work by subscribing and donating to our cause at www.teamgetoverit.com.
Donors get access to specific content like stickers, t-shirts, and postcards from our journey.
You can donate for as little as $5, and the benefits build from there.
Go to our website for more info.
Or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Team Get Over It.
Thanks for listening.
And catch us next time on Get Over It. Oh no.
Are you okay? And I'm like, no. Ready?
You ready?
No. Of course, there are many comforts and conveniences in our modern lives. Oh no. It's time for me to wake up. Sorry, everybody. What are we at? Wait a minute, I need some water because my throat is dying.
Yeah, no, you're good. Don't die, Caitlin. That's bad.
Colossal failure.